What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Freedom. Freedom! Well, sign away my freedom. Why, this is ridiculous.
Don't be corny, brother.
Sure, our system of free enterprise isn't perfect. But before we throw it away for some imported double talk, let's turn the clock back a few years to see what it's done for us.
With your host, Mike Paul.
Nice long pisses, you know?
Just the best kind.
Yeah, where it's like it stops and then it starts again without you even trying to do anything. I'm gonna sound like I'm drunk for real.
That's all right. You can just say you're drunk. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. You know how, like when you have insomnia, then the next day you're like, oh, I'm going to sleep good. But then you get a headache in the afternoon and then you can't fall asleep because of the headaches. Then you get less sleep. And then the third night, then you're just like paranoid, not being able to fall asleep and anxious. So then you don't fall asleep.
Right.
So that's what I did.
I get that. Yep. Dude, I've been sleeping like shit.
It's been, I get it like once or twice a year where it's like 3-4 days, but.
Gotcha. What's up, guys?
How's What's up, man?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Cool.
Hell yeah. Dude, you getting the flannel out of your system before White Boy Summer?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I've actually managed to wear a flannel shirt every day this week, and they're going to have to go soon.
Fuck yeah. They're going to have to. You're going to have to trade them in for a white tee and some Vans, maybe a Jordan hat.
A nice conservative V-neck.
Yep.
Yeah. So we, my co-host Mike is still wrestling his kids. So we technically are live now, but we're going to probably edit some of this beginning shit out anyways.
All right.
So do you just want to roll with it, or do you want a formal introduction?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
No, give me a formal introduction.
Okay. I can do that.
I'm going to make you work.
I know. That's all right. That's all right. We got 30 minutes. So you're definitely making us work. All right, so whenever you guys are ready, you guys ready?
Yeah.
All right. Hello, listeners. We have a very special guest today. He's the host of Boys Town with a Z and co-host of Timeline Earth podcast. He's also a world-renowned class theorist and author of the book 6 Million. Never mind. Anyways, here's Aaron from Timeline Earth.
What's up, man?
How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It's Friday, going into the weekend. Gonna pound some White Claw and continue to shitpost.
Nice. That's good. And I would imagine if you're anything like me, it usually escalates the more you drink too.
Yep.
The level of give a shit decreases tremendously.
Yeah. Yep. After about the eighth White Claw, I'm ready to like foment a riot.
Yeah, or argue with somebody's aunt on Facebook. That's my personal favorite.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. White Claw just brings out the worst in you.
true. Yeah. One sip at a time. Yeah. And Facebook, if you ever, like, if you still use Facebook, is a great medium because it's full of normies. So like you can just pile on people and they have no clue what's going on.
I go on Facebook every once in a while to check out the Mises Caucus page. And every time I do, I'm like, I wish I didn't. I just want to stay on Twitter where everybody's so extra and just like pretend that like all those Facebook people are not just undoing everything that I've done.
There is a little bit of an echo chamber sometimes in the Twitter sphere that you start to think that there's more people thinking the way that we believe. And then you get on Facebook and you're like, oh no.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh wow. It's, they are fucking decades behind.
Yes. Literally decades.
Yeah.
So I think before we dive into it, do you want to give our listeners a little bit of your backstory?
Sure. I grew up in New England. I joined the Navy when I was 22, spent 9 years in there, and grew pretty disillusioned at the state of things. Came out of it, I would say, a libertarian slash anarchist of the mostly of like the capital L libertarian type, and grew disillusioned with that and became more of an anarcho-capitalist, grew disillusioned with that, became more of an anarchist, grew disillusioned with that. And now I'm kind of a hodgepodge of every reactionary and radical ideology out there.
Hell yeah. So that's actually kind of what I wanted to get into. I kind of want to expand upon some of the stuff you recently talked with Pete about how you've been able to kind of successfully blend some of the aspects of Marxist-Leninism and then incorporate that into right-wing anarchism and kind of lay down the foundations of how it can be applied to push the movement forward.
Well, I'm glad there's somebody out there that thinks I'm successful at it. I like kick myself in the balls every day because, you know, I'll read something, I'll be like, ah, oh, shit, I never thought of that. And then try to work through my 85 IQ drug-addled brain, crack-addled brain, like how to how to make it make sense. And yeah, I mean, the way forward for, I don't want to say libertarians because it's too big of a catch-all. I mean, your fucking aunt on Facebook talking about the Constitution could consider herself a libertarian and it would be fine.
Yeah.
I tend to target more the right-wing anarchist label because that lets people know that like where you're at. You're not a capital L libertarian. You're probably not going to go out and vote for Gary Johnson or Joe Jorgensen. You're not a liberal. You're not a leftist and you're not a conservative. So right-wing anarchist, I think, is not perfect, but it's kind of the closest label that I would market myself to, because they need a lot of help. And what I've found is that there's a lot of help out there just from the authoritarian left.
they do seem to be able to get shit done.
Yeah, I mean, if you lower your standards enough and have like, just release your respect for human life. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the defining things about right libertarianism is the non-aggression principle and objective morality and being principled and all that. And that's great. And it should be like that. However, in order to get from where we are right now in 2021 to any semblance of relevancy going forward, you need to adopt more Machiavellian tactics, not principles, but tactics. And that's kind of where I drew a lot of inspiration from in reading people like Lenin and Marx and Engels. You know, and it saddens me to see like there's like when a libertarian talks about communism, it's virtually impossible to tell them apart from like a CIA agent in the 60s, you know? And that's not a position that we should find ourselves in. We should be not open-minded in theory, but open-minded in terms of looking at what we've done, what's worked and what hasn't worked. And what hasn't worked is having a party that is bending the knee to the establishment, that's being more inclusive to people that want us dead and want our to quote somebody I like that wants us dead, wants our children raped and brainwashed, and they think it's funny.
Yeah,
that's not who we should be inclusive to.
Agreed. I was kind of looking, you know, I consider that like a lot of the establishment or Beltway libertarians is like, they're like neoliberals that think it's edgy to say taxation is theft. And I do like what the Mises Caucus is kind of doing, but I think they're still being too accepting of certain people like Justin Amash. Like, yep. I think he's a snake in the grass. I mean, I wasn't a big Trump fan by any means, but to me, Amash just got his 15 minutes of fame by having TDS. And I don't consider him a libertarian on any sort of principle.
He is what Jeb Bush was to the Republicans. Just a palatable kind of it's his turn type deal. And yeah, like you said, he's a snake in the grass. He's a foil for you know, the pragmatics and the left libertarians to come together and say, okay, guys, you can have your moment, but you know, you have to stop with you can only go so far right as Justin Amash, and that he'll be like the compromise. And there's no room for compromise. They're not in a position to do that, and they're getting their asses kicked left and right, and I'm here for it.
It is nice to see.
It's a step in the right direction, baby steps in the right direction. And I'm not all in yet, but if I start seeing some more, like I said, Machiavellian power plays, then yeah, I'll throw my meat space weight behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I like going into like different Facebook groups and different Twitter circles and just kind of, you know, putting your finger in the air and feeling where different demographics of people, like, you know, their political identities, kind of where their head's at. And, you know, with the biggest train wreck ever, I remember in like last summer, I joined a couple of Joe Jorgensen for President meme groups on Facebook. And it was just the most cringe. Like every time I'd go on there, I'd be like, ugh! Like, you know, you want to yak. And it was just like, okay, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And that's why you're talking about like the term libertarian being polluted. And it really, like, I've really distanced myself from that word because, first of all, I don't want to be boxed into some like rigid ideology where people assume they know, you know, what I think about any given topic. But, you know, when we look at where this thing is going, it's like we need to have some sort of populism that transcends political labels. And, you know, the other thing, like, I agree with you guys. I like what the Mises Caucus is doing. But even sometimes when I look at that group and I see where their heads are at, it's like you guys just aren't cynical enough. Like, you need to be a little bit like, you know, there was a post about Justin Amash doing this, like, Q&A with AOC. And a bunch of people were unironically celebrating it. I'm like, guys, like, how gullible do you have to be to think that this is a good tactic?
I just saw a thread with somebody like, oh, the way forward for liberty is to be inclusive and to, you know, share ideas with people that, yeah, no, nope.
Yeah, no. I want to see Dave Smith come out dressed like Che Guevara.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to see his acceptance speech. I want him to come out like a friggin' South American warlord.
Yeah. I want him to use Marxist language and then also like the next sentence, the 14 words. Like, he needs to fucking like, he's not a bad person, and that's the problem. He's not conniving and evil. And I think that to me is, I mean, I think if he surrounds himself with a cabal of true believers that will, you know, usher things forward behind the scenes, then absolutely. But, you know, if he insists on being like good and principled and no, I don't want to change the rules to benefit me, then it might fizzle out, and I hope it doesn't, but like his way forward is by Machiavellianism, you know, being Lenin, the libertarian Lenin.
I don't know if I know of any of them out there, though. I mean, maybe like some guy who's homesteading in Idaho or something that we don't know about, but those type of people don't want to get involved in any of this shit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't blame people for not wanting to get involved in the political system, but you have to understand, like, we're not voting for him to become president because we like his policies. In my humble opinion, the only reason why he should be, you know, up there as a candidate is to set the stage for other phases, you know, whether that be peaceful separation or like a violent overthrow or a collapse or whatever. However deep you want to get into Fed posting here, like, and that's Leninism 101. You use the existing political system, you bend the rules in order to set the stage for, you know, future expansion.
Right. And it's really hard to beat a group of people who, like you said, they don't have any principles. They really bend the rules or their beliefs to fit whatever, you know, promotes the fastest acquisition of power. And that's why, like, if you look at history, when was the last time you saw like a right wing or like classically liberal type revolution?
Yeah. I mean,
maybe, Chile?
You could say the American Revolution, but
yeah,
but like literally the day after that happened, it got subsumed by bankers. So like,
right. You know, I know that like Mike and I have talked about this before. Like, it's very hard to sell like liberty, like taking responsibility for yourself and your actions and minding your own business when the opposite viewpoints are like, well, we'll just give us power and we'll take care of you.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you compete with that? Because like, you know, if we had all had our way, we'd be like, yeah, whatever. I'll sleep all day and do whatever I like and then eat and sleep again.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, there's a huge problem right now just trying to find entry level work. I've been meeting with a lot of small business owners lately, and the turnover is crazy. They say they get kids to work like 2 to 3 days. Then they're like, fuck this. I can go home and get paid. Why am I doing something I hate and paying taxes and burning gas and all my day when I can play video games all day or do whatever I want and just get sent a check in the mail. And I know like, I think McDonald's in some areas was paying $50 just to have people interview because they can't even get people to show up for interviews. They're so understaffed.
Shit, I'll interview.
Just get the incentive and run.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's some late stage shit right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, in a perfect world, I think what we'd all want on this sort of like libertarian right is that we just want to get our message out to the masses and try to change as many people's minds as possible by whatever means that takes. And I think right now there actually is a golden opportunity. So I work in the wholesale plumbing industry. I work sales. And right now prices of everything are going up. Copper, PVC, water heaters. It's just every week we get a new report about how this vendor and that vendor are up 10, 15% on the week. And it's getting really difficult to get your hands on product, like just toilets, faucets, just things that, you know, were never an issue before. And people will, you know, their eyes pop when they look at the total for their orders and their tickets. And they're like, Jesus. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, you print $15 trillion in a year and we don't think that's going to have an effect on prices. Yeah. And then I swear I'm betting like 800 with that line. Everybody's like, yeah, no shit. You know, when they're doing all that shit, who do they think is going to pay for it? And I think right now when we're like looking at the economic forecast and we're seeing in real time what, you know, enhanced unemployment and welfare actually does, when you see like you can't go a week without hearing some business owner saying, I can't get help right now. And everybody knows somebody that is on unemployment right now. And it's no longer theory or speculation. All the variables are pretty much filed down to where we could just see it happening. So I think there is a chance right now that we could win over, you know, significantly more people than we otherwise would have a couple of years ago.
Yeah. You just have to know which people to target. Like me, for instance, I'm in facilities. So I see those invoices for $600 flushometers and, you know, a plumbing quote for $5,000 to replace like 20 feet of fucking no hub. So like,
yeah,
I see that shit happen too, but I mean, for me, you know, if it meant like shit like that, if it keeps going on, I'll lose my job. And yeah, that would probably radicalize me. I happen to work for a fucking stupid company that's just has all the money in the world, so they don't care. But yeah, I mean, you have to pinpoint those relatable weaknesses and those pressure points of radicalization to each individual person you interact with. And, you know, like I've been preaching, you might not make them libertarian, but the goal is to make them anti-centrist, like anti-neoliberal. Because, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the day, a Marxist-Leninist is better than a neoliberal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree.
I live out in a small farm town in Illinois, and I go around to a lot of small towns, and, you know, probably over half of the businesses, gas stations, everything I stop at throughout the day, no one's wearing a mask, not even the staff. And I've gone to the point now where I thank them for not enforcing it. Like, thanks for making me feel like a human. And, you know, like, you know, no one really cares. People get mad. We did it for a while, but there's no reason to. But I'm getting to the point where it's like, no, like, congratulate this behavior, encourage it, make them want to do it more, you know? So
absolutely. When
you see somebody else in public, like, give them a thumbs up when they're not wearing a mask. Like, you got to show them that there's camaraderie, that we're not all crazy and off the deep end.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, reinforce, not revolutionary behavior, but reinforce dissidents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see Bird that tweet about like what they're going to do at Yankees and Mets games about how they're going to have separate seating for the unvaccinated people? And, you know, like at first glance, you're like, hey, wait a minute, I've seen this before. But then, like, you know, Bird had a really good point. He's like, that's going to be fucking awesome. Because all the unvaccinated people can just be like, dude, like, you know, you have all like-minded people sitting by you now.
Yeah, it was absolutely. It was like that meme that was going around last year where it's McLovin in Superbad. And it's like when you walk into the store and see other people without masks on and he's like, gangsters, what's up? You know, it's like that's how I am with other people that aren't vaccinated, that don't wear masks.
Yeah, but could they also just be like collectively targeting us and just like slipping something in your hot dog and your Coke when you're at the game? They're trying to.
I've seen things like they're trying to develop a vaccine that will spread itself, like basically a virus that's a vaccine,
and it has side effects. You know, you're going to get a bad chest cold and be laid up for a few days, but it works.
I'm sure if you have like Paws on, he could probably articulated a lot better than I can. I just read the headline and was like, all right.
it's definitely strange times, but I know even my mom was talking to me about that today, actually, before we started recording. She's like, yeah, it's going to be weird. Like I don't know what they're going to do with unvaccinated people. And I'm like, wait, mom, like I don't have that shit, mom. My mom's going to load me in the boxcar.
That's the end goal. The end goal is to have
your fault, idiot. Yeah.
The end goal is to have your obese, purple-haired, transgender Muslim grandchildren load you onto the boxcar for tweets you made in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, every successful totalitarian regime in history, like, one of their central tenets is that they're able to split I'm sleep deprived right now, so I'm stuttering like a motherfucker, but they can split families apart, you know, like in North Korea and in Iran, all these things. It's, you know, that's the goal. That's the end game.
Yeah. Well, Mao in China had all the students like trained to rat on their parents too. They were called something. I don't remember what it is.
Kim Jong-un has a similar program in North Korea. Malice had a refugee. I forget her name. It's like Young Mi Park. Anyways, she said that like they were told, like they had all these behavioral exercises to basically normalize telling on each other.
Yeah.
And that's why the government wants your kids here. You know, that's why they want government preschool. They want, you know, they don't want your kids going to the church down the road for preschool anymore. They want them going to a government preschool for the same reason.
Yeah, you're going to find that homeschooling, private schools, all that is going to become less and less accessible through legislation and, you know, whatever they can do to inflate the cost. You're already seeing that right now. Right now, it's just on state level. Some states are getting better. Some states are getting worse. And but, you know, when California does something, it eventually makes its way across the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, that explains, like, the whole push on the left right now for universal college, like free college, which is just going to become the new standard for the high school diploma, which is just completely nonsensical and raise taxes. And I remember last year during the Democratic primary debates, they were going through all the candidates and they're like, what do you think about free college? And Bernie Sanders like, I think that it should be a free and it's all right and all this stuff. And then they're all kind of parroting that line. And then I didn't know anything about Amy Klobuchar. I'd heard her talk like maybe once or twice. I knew that she was just kind of like milquetoast, neoliberal, dumb skank. And it goes to her. And I'm sitting next to my wife, who is my fiance at the time. I'm like, Lauren, watch this. She's going to say that she's for free community college. And then it pans to her. She's like, I went to community college. I know lots of successful people who went to community college. And it's just like, it's utterly predictable. Like they all want to go in that direction. The question is just how fast and how much.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. If you can implement some sort of UBI and then extend education forever, then you have a population of loyal servants.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And they know that. They know that. I mean, it's there's research that proves it. Like, I mean, look at the data on the welfare program. It's, you have generations of people that stay on it. And they knew that when they created it. There was, you know, they had some choice words about it when they created it. But they're just going to apply it to everyone because it's kind of hard when, you know, if you look at pretty much every secession or overthrow or coup or whatever it is, conditions have to be terrible for people.
Yeah.
And those countries weren't doing UBI. The UBI will be the ultimate buy-off. It'll, you know, that's what the stimulus payments were too. They were basically saying, please don't get pissed off. Don't vote us out, you know, or worse.
You can riot in the major cities, but stay out of the suburbs. Like,
yeah.
You know, my question is with the UBI thing, it's like, how long can that really last before the wheels just fall off? Because, I mean, you could look at this past 14 months as sort of a UBI trial run. And we're already seeing massive inflation and you're starting to see a lot more like mainstream people saying, guys, this isn't looking good. Like the economy could be circling the drain right now, which I presume we all know, like we all knew that for the last, you know, X amount of years that this was built on a house of cards. But if they do institute UBI, it's like, I think it's going to be like a self-destructing mechanism.
It is, and it isn't. Right now we still have the dollar as the world hegemony for world finance. And, you know, they can leverage that to do pretty much whatever they want. I mean, we still have military bases all over the world. That's the whole fucking, what is it? The Bretton Woods agreement. I mean, like any country gets out of line in any way. I mean, that we'll find oil or, you know, they'll become the next nexus for terrorism or humanitarian crisis that we need to intervene in or whatever. I mean, you know, we're still the world hegemony as far as world finance goes. So, I mean, we're not quite post-scarcity, but we can make it close to it if we, you know, get desperate enough.
And we're always going to be relatively wealthier than most countries. Like that's the thing with having reserve currency, which I mean, you know, whether or not that lasts, I think it probably will for the foreseeable future, but it's going to be interesting going forward. If another country or central bank decides to actually tighten and try to strengthen their currency, but then, you know, we'll see if the war machine, how they like that.
Like if say Russia and China were to come out with a joint gold backed currency, and then enforce their sphere of influence, that would be disruptive.
Very, very disruptive. Yeah, because it's basically the U.S. military, like you said, that's backed the currency for decades now.
Absolutely, that was my job when I was in the Navy, was enforcing global trade.
Yeah, That's, you know, and freeing, you know, freeing the people of the Middle East. We got to make sure.
Of course, yeah. Spreading democracy, liberal democracy.
Yeah. So I know you're a little tight on time here, Aaron. So I found a news story that I wanted to get your guys' opinion on. So you guys are familiar with TripAdvisor, right? You know, the travel site. Mm-hmm. So TripAdvisor removed an insensitive review of the Auschwitz Museum. This is NBC News. So travel website TripAdvisor has removed an insensitive review of the Auschwitz Museum after initially saying it complied with submission guidelines. The museum at the site of Nazi concentration camp in Poland on Thursday tweeted that it had asked the Massachusetts-based travel website to take down a review in which the writer said they went to Auschwitz to test the chamber and called the site fun for the family. And now, according to the company, it complies with their submission guidelines, the tweet said. TripAdvisor later reversed course, removing the review and banning the user who wrote it. The museum then thanked TripAdvisor.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, you're not allowed to do that. You're just simply not allowed.
Like, what do you guys think of that? You think it was like some like grade A level trolling, or do you think Absolutely. It was just some smooth brain? You think?
Yeah, it was some 4chan autist like just nailing a corporation, and I love it. I only wish I thought of it.
I was perusing the Drudge Report because, you know, occasionally I like to dive into the gutter to see what I can find. And that was on the Drudge. So the Drudge, Matt Drudge knocked it out of the park today.
Yeah.
Yeah. I figured you guys would appreciate that one.
I didn't even know they were still around. I used to go on Drudge all the time back in the day.
So I, at least once a week, I'll go on the Drudge. And what they do is they went like heavy on coronavirus. Which was weird because like Drudge Report was like on a watch list for a while because they were considered too conservative. You know, they made Fox News look like MSNBC.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think they were the ones that broke the Clinton Lewinsky scandal. I think that Matt Drudge actually broke that story.
Wasn't he like Alex Jones' mentor at one point?
He might have been.
Okay.
He's had his hands in like everything. Like from the mid 90s to like the late 2000s.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, I don't know if he sold it or what, but I mean, if you saw it all during the coronavirus pandemic, oh my God, every story was about hysteria about COVID. I was like, oh, this is, and I actually texted an old coworker of mine who used to read Drudge every day. And I was like, what the fuck happened? He goes, yeah, we don't read that shit no more.
Yeah. Yep. See ya.
Yeah. We moved on to InfoWars. We're done with that shit.
That sounds like what happened with Vice and like coming from Gavin McInnes and then becoming like just the most ultra social justice blue pilled news site there is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Wikipedia too. The original co-founder was on Tim Pool a couple weeks ago, and he says he calls himself the former founder because he wants nothing to do with it because it went all woke, and he said it's propaganda now. It's no longer an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
So have any of you guys had any luck like getting through to the woke people? I mean, outside of like antagonizing them to get them to turn on each other, like have you actually been able to get through to them?
No.
No, I attack them from the left. I put it in terms of you are useful idiots of capitalism. You're subdividing the working class up into 1,000 different groups and having them fight each other. And you're handing more material benefit and power over to fucking people that you'll never have as much material wealth as they do, as they make in like a week.
Yeah. And they're all like just grassroots advocates for Big Pharma. All of a sudden they're out there just
weird
trying to set record profits for Big Pharma, who they used to hate like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's odd.
Yeah,
they're just a bunch of stooges. It's really funny to watch because even like during the election I saw a lot of these Bernie Sanders supporters who were like, I would talk to them and I'd be like, you know, they're like, I hate racism, Donald Trump's a racist. And then when Biden got the nomination, they're like, I hate racism. I'm like, you understand Biden was like wanted Reagan to be harder on the war on drugs. He also was the author of the 94 crime bill. Like, this guy's done more to ruin African-American families than any person in Congress. And they're like, yeah, he's racist, but, and then they all went out and voted for him.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, yeah.
So no, that's they just wanted Trump out.
Yeah.
Trump was reaction. And, you know, at the end of the day, they hate reaction more than they hate actual problems.
True.
And now they've made reaction an actual problem.
Yeah. Because their reaction is going to cause some serious implications going forward. I mean, if you look at like the way that they're already trying to spend, you know, they're pushing for all these laws, which will end up being incredibly unpopular. That's weird. Mm-hmm. But I just was curious if any of you guys had actually been able to reach anyone, because I pretty much have given up on trying to outreach, and I just try to meme them and make fun of them until they cry.
No,
back in like the mid 2010s, like the 2016 election, when you know things were starting to get like more egalitarian on the left. I'd have arguments and debates with Bernie bros all the time. And it was mostly in terms of like, you know, socialism, the economic calculation problem. And that never did anything. And then once they started going woke, I was like, all right, you're a fucking enemy now. I have like, there's no conversation to be had.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not on social media. I got rid of my Facebook about a year and a half ago, right before COVID. So I just luckily did that before I lost all kinds of extended family and whatnot. But yeah, I don't really engage with many woke people at all, because I surrounded myself by like-minded people now. And I have a couple Bernie bros, but the ones I have in touch with, they didn't even vote for Biden because they knew he's part of the establishment. So they're at least a little more free thinking, and I can still have thought provoking discussions with them. But no, I've never converted a woke to an inch towards my side before.
I've taken a blue pilled person and made them purple pilled. I've gotten like that far before, but I've never actually red pilled somebody who's like full blown SJW.
Yeah. I mean, I've taken people with pronouns in their bios and made them more amicable towards like Marxists. Like I think I've led a couple people down the path to, you know, being more radicalized. But definitely not like, you know, they're not libertarians. They're just more Marxist.
Right. It's a whole other problem.
I agree with Aaron, though. I think it's a better problem than neoliberals. I really do. I mean, at least they're the classic Marxist-Leninists, their belief system, like, we already know it's the polar opposite, and we kind of know the playbook. Neoliberals they're soulless lizards.
Yeah.
They're the suburban woke bougie white women of this country are the most dangerous demographic out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. More dangerous than any Marxist could ever dream of being.
Yeah. You like Dave Smith. Well, I was going to say, like, Dave Smith has been making this point that the centers became the radical. Like, John McCain and Hillary Clinton have led us to this mess where they took, like, the most prosperous country in human history and we're on the brink of collapse. Like, any moment, like, could be the last straw, you know?
Yeah.
I think we're 5 to 10 years, I think. I think that they're going to prolong it a bit, but you're already starting to see it amongst the states. If you notice, a lot of Midwestern and Southern states have started to pass laws like nullification of any new or future federal gun control, stuff like that. I think you're starting to see the seeds being planted slowly, but I mean, we'll see. Cause I, you know, there's always, whenever you see a movement, you get your hopes up and then they just end up getting Justin Amashed. So I think the seeds are being sown, but it's going to take like any classic complete change of course and direction for a country. It's going to take collapse. I think it's going to take the bottom blown out. I mean, if you look at the conditions in 1917 Russia, they were terrible. Or even, you know, in Germany with the rise of the Nazis, like, conditions were terrible. They had runaway inflation, unemployment, everyone was broke. You know, they're basically just partying all day.
Yeah.
No, that's what I was going to say. Actually, just came back to me. Sorry. Was that Nick was saying how people are still comfortable, and that's why there's no real pushback. It's like their internet still works. There's still food at the grocery store. They still have gas that's not crazy high. They, you know, they still exist, and it's like, whatever. They say it's bad, but it'll get better. And once the masses realize that we hit a point of no return is when it might get, you know, civil unrest. And that's the, that's why I moved out away from everyone. You know, just last year I got out in the sticks and I was like, I don't want to be anywhere near a city. I want to be a small town with like-minded people. Cause I don't know what's on the horizon, but this is definitely a better place to be regardless.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, for anything like that to take place, you have to have a critical mass of people. We'll say like I said on Pete's show, 3% ish to, you know, to be radicalized and to have, you know, collapse or revolution or a coup as their goal. And even if they fail, it's still going to spread that dissidence, that necessary dissidence. Yeah. And that's kind of the seeds for that are well planted now.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a first try at the revolution in Russia? Was there?
It was more like a political revolution first, and then came the armed revolution.
Yeah, because they basically instilled like the November Revolution. Yeah. And then then they realized that this is nothing changed. Well, just the same dickheads in power.
Yeah, you had like socialism as a whole, and then you had the Bolsheviks all the way to the left, and then you had the Democratic Socialists who you know they worked together to bring about the provisional government, which implemented a lot of reforms that they liked. But the Bolsheviks, their task was to say, "Oh no, we're not stopping right now. We're going to keep this train rolling," and you know that's how that went.
Yeah,
and okay. that's kind of like. If you could compare it to right now, that's kind of what the LPMC needs to do. You know, it doesn't stop when Dave Smith becomes the nominee. It doesn't stop when all of the state parties become LPMC dominant. You just have to move on to the next institution to take over.
Right. Well, yeah. The momentum can't stop.
Absolutely. Did you listen to Dave Smith on Michael Malice a couple of days ago? They're saying if Dave Smith did pull off the impossible and actually get elected, Michael Malice being the press secretary, like taking on the press. Yeah. I think that would be what would do it. That's where we need to get to.
Yeah. And I don't have any delusions about, you know, the popular vote or actually winning offices. But at the same time, it's like that shouldn't be the goal anyways. It should be, you know, to wake people up, get them woke, but woke on, you know, reactionary thinking.
You know, everyone talks about how the Ron Paul movement died out, and it's like there were still embers, and you know, the Dave Smith and Tom Woods that came from that. And you know, I didn't know anything about Ron Paul back then. I was 18 the first time he ran, so I was still kind of like a neocon. I didn't really pay that much attention. I was like, hey, this whatever Sean Hannity says, that's who I'm voting for, you know, because I was a mindless teenager. But I didn't get into really libertarianism until Nick heard Dave Smith on Rogan like the first time years ago. And then we started listening to that whole circuit of podcasts. And it brought me more and more to the point where I'm like, oh, shit, this all makes way more sense. So the fact that we're having this conversation with you is a byproduct of the Ron Paul movement. It's because Dave Smith kept it alive on Rogan and got us back on board and fired it back up and started stoking the flames.
Yeah. I was a huge Ron Paul 2012 guy. You know, he kind of introduced me to this whole fucking sphere. And, for that, I'm very grateful, even though, you know, he'd probably want to hit me with a stick. For like what I've turned into.
But, I think you need to keep the messaging up, because there's an opportunity for Dave Smith to do a Stalin-like purge of the Libertarian Party. He can continue the nice guy act until he gets nominated, and then it's out with the old, in with the new.
Yeah, I mean, his public-facing persona he could very well have this as his plan. His public-facing persona is conciliatory, and then behind the scenes, he's just cutting throats.
Yeah. Well, and you got to remember, he's been hanging out with them Legion of Skanks guys for a long time. So I'm sure there's some ruthlessness in there somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, and I think he's ready.
Yeah. And, you know, he has like, you know, Pete and Shane Hazel as like, you know, friends and acquaintances. So that alone is very encouraging.
Yeah. But I do hope that they really go for the messaging. I know I've been pushing to get Pete as the social media director for the LP.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. I think that there's good opportunity to, especially right now with a lot of like disillusioned conservatives, you're not going to get them on everything, but you could bring them to your side, or at least to the point where they could maybe push the GOP a little bit as well.
Yeah. And the GOP is being pushed to be more reactionary. They saw the Trump movement and they saw that Trump was completely incompetent with all that energy he'd harnessed. And all it takes is for somebody with a IQ over 90 and some oratory skills, and we could have the next Hitler.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, geez.
Well, and I've been wondering that this entire past 4 or 5 years is, how is it that somebody like Mitch McConnell or all those establishment, you know, center right neocon Republicans are still in power? Like, all that has to happen is like they are losing popularity at an exponential rate. And how long before their local district, who just always go to vote and check the name on the box because their local guy is famous relatively, how long before that support it gets so low that they get voted out? I mean, I don't know. I have no idea what's in store for the GOP, if they're going to dissolve or just go in a radically different direction.
You know, we're talking about manipulating democracy to win the battle of democracy. That's what they've been masters at for longer than we've been alive. You know, when you look at the ballot and it's Mitch McConnell and he's the only choice, really, or some guy you've never heard of, you're probably just going to stick with the devil you know and stick with the campaign signs and the commercials you've been bombarded with, because you're definitely not going to vote Democrat and you're not really sure about this independent guy or this libertarian guy. So whatever, he's a Republican. He probably likes guns. So,
you know what I've seen too, is like a lot of Republican voters, they have more, I would say, like libertarian-ish stances. But yeah, what it always comes down to is exactly what you just said. Like, they're like, oh, well, this libertarian, like, I kind of like what they say, but they want to legalize marijuana and I can't do that. Mm-hmm. Or they don't want to support police. Oh, I can't do that. But I don't know, man. So I live in rural Nebraska right now, and I legitimately have had people refer to Joe Biden as the Antichrist, like to my face. I was signing up for a gym membership. And the lady goes, did you vote for Biden? And I was like, no. And she's like, you want to know what I think about him? I'm like, enlighten me. She's like, I think he's the Antichrist. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, she's like, I read the Bible and I think he's the Antichrist.
You know what, though? That lady is more useful than any fucking New England Republican I can think of. Because the New England Republican's like, I don't like Biden because he's fucking, you know, not tough enough on crime, or not, like, you know, he got rid of like fracking or the oil pipeline or whatever. And I'm like, how the fuck does that affect you in any way? Now, if he's the Antichrist, then that does affect you.
Yeah. And,
you know, so everyone said the same,
are more useful.
Absolutely. Yes. Everyone said the same thing about Obama. Remember, he's the Antichrist. And, you know, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater when they say that kind of stuff, because if you examine all that progressivism is, it is just a giant movement to dismantle Christianity and Christian influences on our society. So it's a very anti-Christian movement to be a part of that. I'm not saying any one person is a literal son of Satan, but it's definitely not a Christian movement. So she's
not
wrong.
Has an air of we don't believe in God, but we're gonna fulfill the role.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And Joe Biden would just be the most kind of disappointing Antichrist you could imagine. You'd expect him to be like some charismatic guy, and it's just an 80-year-old man that kind of forgets where he is. He's like, you know, Joe, you're supposed to be the Antichrist, and he's like, we're gonna go to the 100 days of mass, and he just, like, you can't be the Antichrist and not know that you're the Antichrist. Like, I want him to be more with it. You know, I'm holding out for a better candidate.
Yeah.
Well, I think his VP might have a good shot.
Oh, she could do it. She fits the bill.
Yeah.
She has the laugh. The laugh is definitely the laugh of the Antichrist.
She's got the DSLs too.
Yeah. So I was on a Fox News comments section because those are always good. Like they're better than Twitter. They're better than Twitter. And someone referred to this administration as Sleepy Joe and Dirty Knees. And I was like, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Like had that guy been born like 30 years later, he would have been probably a shit poster, you know, a mutual.
Yeah. It probably would have been one of my favorite follows. Yeah. So, yes. Like speaking of shit posting. So how, has your account been at risk since you've gotten back on?
There've been a couple times where I'm like, ooh, I might get a timeout or maybe get nuked for that. But I kind of try to keep it light until I hit 2000 and then it's time to renew. It's time to fucking, you know, end the world and start anew.
Yeah. So you're not caught up. We had El Popo on yesterday. You're not at his level yet, right? I think he's on to like having his girlfriend give Google voice numbers to get a new account.
Yeah, no, I've had to do that. I've had a couple Google voice members. You know, I always have one on standby. The last time I got banned, I had gotten banned. My account before that got banned, like within I think a 3 month time frame. So I didn't have an account on standby. So it took me like a week to get back up because I was just lazy. But I've had probably 3 or 4 accounts nuked so far. Nice. And it's just a matter of making another Proton Mail address and getting another Google voice number.
I already got the Proton Mail account ready to go. Yeah. I keep it pretty PG-13 on it. I know who to avoid on there, like your Archies and all those clowns. I avoid those people because those seem to be the ones that go after Mr. Pete nonstop. Mm-hmm. So I try to avoid those clowns.
I have one of the main clowns keep following all my accounts. Like, I guess he or she, whatever their preferred pronoun is. Like, she's followed me every single time. And every single time I've gotten into like an altercation with her and gotten like a 12-hour or a 7-day.
Really?
For like what I say. And like, maybe she, I don't know.
Hmm.
It's Brianna Coyle. I'm like, ooh. I saw that she followed me the other day. I'm like, I posted that SpongeBob meme. It's like, how many times do we have to teach you this lesson, old man?
Yeah, and I definitely am seeing, like, I think that the social media shit's going to get worse. I really do.
You mean that worse isn't better? Because it's fucking awesome.
Okay.
Right now.
On surface level, it'll be worse. But I enjoy you and a few others' philosophy of when they nuke your account, you just come back. Mm-hmm. And you just keep bringing the heat.
Don't give them space to be comfortable. Don't make them think that they're winning.
Right. And because that's really what they want. These people, I know this because I think I'm in double digits for how many people I've lost on Facebook just due to posting about COVID, really. I don't even, there's no, nothing extreme about what I say. I just throw the data out there and kind of mock them in my mm-hmm. tone. And yeah, I see on the people you may know, I'm like, hey, I thought I was friends with them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I was so grateful to get rid of my Facebook before COVID broke out. I got rid of it in like December of 19. Like, I would not be allowed to go to family reunions had I stayed on. Like, that would have gotten so bad. Like, even at this point, my wife's grandmother is in her early 80s, so, you know, obviously if you know, we want to be safe around her anyways because she's in a vulnerable demographic for COVID, but she's been vaccinated and she wanted to have a Mother's Day party this weekend out at her pond outdoors, right? But she said only vaccinated people can come, even though she's vaccinated. My wife told our mother-in-law, she's like, my mother-in-law, she's like, so we're just never going to see grandma again. She's like, we're not getting vaccinated. So she's 82 and she's not going to be seen with people who are not vaccinated. Like, we're never going to see her again. So basically goodbye. It's terrible. I mean, what are we going to do?
Yeah. All you can do is take this lesson and impart it into your kids. Like, don't exactly. do this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really tragic. And it's really sad that that's happening to a lot of people that are very close to me. I'm watching it go play out and I'm like, you're vaccinated. Like, why do you care what I do? Like, why do you want to use my kids as a guinea pig?
Yeah. Luckily, I've kind of made it plain to my girlfriend who just graduated nursing school. Like, they're like, don't bother me about the vaccine. It's just not going to happen. It's not worth it. I'll get in an argument with you if you want, but like,
right.
And she's been cool about it.
That's good.
And I made it a point with, you know, many of my family and friends. I'm like, I'm not getting it. So we can move on.
Yeah.
We don't ever need to talk about it again.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're approaching an hour. I know you got White Claws to chug, so I don't know if you. I don't want to stop a man from chugging some White Claws. But definitely appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. So do you got anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, I got Boys Town with Aaron, a Timeline Earth production, comes out the third Friday of every month. This episode, I'll have Steppy at Please No, and Rothbardian, who is a fellow masshole, and I gave her some homework to do. I gave her some light reading, and she's going to share her thoughts on that coming from a Rothbardian perspective. And, you know, other than that, Timeline Earth, and you can find me at TLEBTWA, Boys Town with Aaron. I don't even fucking know my at. Just find me on Twitter. Like, I fuck up my at so bad.
It's long. It's long. It's long.
And it means something. I just, you know.
Awesome.
So, well, yeah. I found it. So, it's at GFYTLEBTWA.
Yep. Go fuck yourself. I'm on Earth. Boys Town with Aaron.
That's the messaging we're here
for now. And it's very easy to remember. It'll be something else.
Awesome. Oh, cool, man. We really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on. And sorry I was late. Got kids that fight bedtime. But so we'll be at Freedom Fest July 21st through 24th in Rapid City. And please head over to iTunes, rate and review the show, and find the show on Twitter at Paul's to the Walls with a Z on the wall.
Also, I'll be at Pork Fest June 23rd through the 26th in Lancaster, New Hampshire.
Nice, cool.
Awesome.
So I'll be at Childeberg, and it sounds like you will not be at Childeberg.
Yeah, I don't think I could pull off two festivals in one year.
That's a lot.
I'd have to like cut down on my crack consumption to save some money for that. And that's just not going to happen.
No, you already have a budget for the year. It's set. You can't adjust it.
Awesome. So,
all right, man. Well, thanks again.
All right. Peace.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.